This is a stump. Reminds me of one of the nicknames that I had when I was a kid. Sometimes I think I had more nicknames than other people. I'll tell you a few of them if you promise to not use the less flattering ones. My mother called me Spaghetti Legs. I still don't know why. I tried to get my classmates to call me the Beast when I was in grade 8, and I was 105 pounds and about 5'2". They only did it once when we were playing softball against another school, and I was in the dugout, and the bases were loaded, and I was up to bat, and I got them to start chanting, "Release the Beast! Release the Beast!" And I was kicking up dirt in the dugout and throwing it around, and everyone's taking big steps back on the football field waiting for the Beast to come. And then they saw me come up, and everyone's tightening up a little bit. I didn't mind most of my nicknames, but I hated Stumpy. Which, not that I found it insulting, I hated Stumpy because it didn't make sense. Stumps are short, and I was short, but they're usually thicker, right? They're sort of wide, and I was never like that. And this guy who kept calling me Stumpy, he didn't know that. See, if he was being ironic, if he was being Stumpy, like you call a short person stretch, right? You know, you're kind of doing the flip side, that makes sense. But he actually thought it fit, and it drove me nuts. Still does, actually. That's probably why I'm telling you. I should have forgot this long ago. I used to be called a stump, and I think that part of me knows what it is like to feel like a stump. Although stumps don't actually feel anything. You may already know that. But if stumps did feel something, here's probably what this particular stump would feel. I was happy and in the bush. I had roots. I had branches. I had a future. I had plans. I was going to result in other trees. And then Don Buchan came. And he chopped me down and he hauled me here. And then my branches came off and George nearly butchered me. And now I'm just a stump. I know what it's like to have ambitions and dreams that have been taken away. So do you. I bet you do. I bet some of you it's health. Right? It wasn't supposed to end up like a stump, but it did. The plans you have for the future got cut off somehow. Maybe it was marriage. Maybe it was supposed to be this way and it ended up this way. Maybe what your tree was supposed to look like was a beautiful home life and family. And instead it's just a stump and it's all cut off. And there's no future, or so it would seem. There's no life ahead. What you had is lost. So it's not just that your future isn't going to happen, it's that what you had is gone. And I'm telling you about the stump because we've moved into our third theme of Between the Trees, which is exile. And if you want to understand what it's like to be in exile, you simply just have to think of a stump. One of the things God does between the trees, Dave, is there anything I can do to get rid of that echo? Have a drink, maybe. One of the things that God does between the trees is exile. Sometimes we go into exile, we're brought out of exile. And if you want to understand what that means, you just think of a stump. There's been times when you're in exile, maybe you're in exile even now. We are going to spend 3 weeks looking at exile. This week, we're going to go a different direction, but let me tell you about next week. When you end up in exile, sometimes it's self-inflicted. Okay? You end up there because of something you've done. You consistently say to God, no, basically, I'm going to not do what you're telling me, God. You want me to go this way in my life, and I am going to go that way, and I'm going to be unrepentant about it. And sooner or later, when we break enough of God's laws, we end up broken. At least I do. One of the things that's made the most sense to me in my life is this idea that you don't break God's laws, you break yourself on them. So you go in an opposite direction from what He wants for you, and you end up broken. You end up like a stump. Now that's tragic, but there's a really good side to that, and it's this. If you do that, if you put yourself in exile, you can also bring yourself back up, back into the story. And all through the Bible, there's this mantra from God, this repeated phrase, if you would just stop whatever you're doing, and return to me, then I will bless you. So there's self-inflicted exile. There's the times when we stump ourselves. That's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about that next week. Places where I've stumped myself. Places where you've stumped yourself. Places where Portage Alliance Church, maybe because of its disobedience, has stumped itself. And then what we need to do to get back into the story next week. This week, we're talking about a different kind of stump. This is the one that just happens to you. This is when, for the life of you, something in your life, something has gone wrong, terribly wrong, and for the life of you, you don't know why. And biblically, that kind of exile isn't your fault. Now, I want to establish for you that it's not your fault, because there is a type of person, and I know many of them, who truly believe that if something tragic is happening in their life right now, it can be and ought to be tied to something in their past that they did wrong. Because if God is just, then what's wrong in my life now is a result of Him punishing me. And there's sometimes we can say to people, no, it doesn't work that way, it doesn't work that way, but they still live in that sense that it's because of what they did that God's punishing them. But that's not true. Not always. There's two types of exile. There is the exile where that is the case. You've broken God's laws and you end up in exile. There's another kind where you've done nothing wrong, it just happened. It takes some real discernment to know between the two. It takes some real listening to God. It takes a good community of people around you to help you see this stuff, but there's a difference there. We're going to talk about the second kind, the stuff that just happens. We know that it just happens because there's a story in the Bible, a very lengthy one, about somebody that it just happened to. His name is Job. Job has everything at the beginning of the story. They tell you he's the richest man in the land. He has a beautiful family. He's healthy. And then in one fell swoop, he loses his family. He loses his money and he loses his health. And the rest of the book is this interesting dialogue between Job and his friends as they try and convince him that the tragedy that's happening in his life is directly tied to something he's done wrong. And they're kind of sarcastic and they're trying to poke him and say, there's got to be something, Job, that God is punishing you for. And Job over and over and over says, no, there's nothing. Nothing. And it goes back and forth, back and forth. Finally, Job just lets them have it in Job 27. Listen to his response. He says, I make this vow by the living God who's taken away my rights, by the Almighty who has embittered my soul. As long as I live, while I have breath from God, my lips will speak no evil and my tongue will speak no lies. I will never concede that you are right until I die. I will defend my innocence. I will maintain my innocence without wavering. My conscience is clear for as long as I live. And then he just goes on. He's done nothing wrong. Later on, in chapter 31, he does this long list of what he hasn't done. And he's been perfect, basically. And he's offered to us as an example of somebody who lived a perfect life, did nothing wrong, and yet had everything taken from him. Job, for no reason, got stumped. And everyone around him wants him to see that it was something that he did wrong, but there's nothing he did wrong. Just when you can't stand it anymore, in the book of Job, God comes on the scene, and you can hardly wait. Because we think, here's what God's going to do. He's going to find that one thing that Job is missing. Here's way back in that closet, Job, in 800 BC, on a Tuesday in the afternoon, you did this thing, and that's why this tragedy is happening. God does nothing like that. God just comes on the scene and asks Job a bunch of questions. Questions like, Job, where were you when I made the sea and I said to it, waves, you can only go this far and no further? Where were you, Job, when I made a hippopotamus? You can't even catch a hippopotamus. I made a hippopotamus. Like, three chapters of this kind of thing. And you're thinking to yourself, what's going on here? But it's important to see what God doesn't do here. He doesn't say, yeah, here's the connection, Job, you just missed it. He doesn't give Job an explanation for why he's suffering. He simply just says, by way of all these questions, Job, there is something so vastly bigger going on around you that you have no idea. And so your choice is to trust me or not. There's no reason for this, but I did all this stuff, and here I am. That's Job. Now, for some of you, that may be comforting, that it's not your fault. For some of you, probably not, because you're still suffering. What do you do when you're in exile, and it's not your fault, when there's no way to bring yourself out of it. You start to think new thoughts. You have to. You have to get new ideas. You have to get a different way of looking at reality than you currently have. And that's what God gives to the people of Israel when they're in exile. Look at the image he gives them in Isaiah 6. We'll get to it eventually. I'll read a few verses first. Isaiah is a prophet who is speaking to the people who are about to go into exile and who are already in exile. Dave, I think I might have figured it out. Are the monitors on? No. All right. Am I the only one whose ears are ringing? Because then I'll just blow my nose. No. All right. Well, then I won't worry about it, and neither will you, because I'll stop drawing attention to it every 2 minutes. In Isaiah 6, God is calling Isaiah to be his prophet, to speak his words to these people who are about to go through incredible pain and then live in it for a long time. And God calls him to the task by saying in verse 8, "Whom should I send as messenger to my people? Who will go for us?" And Isaiah predictably says, "Lord, I'll go, send me." Then God tells him what he has to do. And God said, "Yes, go, but tell my people this. You'll hear my words, but you will not understand. You will see what I do, but you will not perceive its meaning. Harden the hearts of these people. Close their ears and shut their eyes. That way they will not see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn to me for healing." Then Isaiah said, "Lord, how long must I do this?" Which to me is really funny, because in verse 8, he's like, "Yeah, send me, I'll go." Then he hears what he has to do, and he says, "Lord, how long do I have to do this?" God replies, "Until their cities are destroyed, with no one left in them, until their houses are deserted and the whole country is an utter wasteland. Do not stop until the Lord has sent everyone away to distant lands and the entire land of Israel lies deserted. Even if only a tenth, a remnant, survive, it will be invaded again and burned. Israel will remain a stump, like a tree that is cut down, but the stump will be a holy seed that will grow again." Some things in this passage that we can learn from, I think. One of them is in verse 9 and 10. Isaiah is called to go to these people who aren't going to get it. They aren't going to hear. His ministry to them is actually going to harden their ears and eyes, and they're going to put up this wall, and nothing's going to get through. I can't imagine how discouraging that is, but I am thankful that in this place, as near as I can tell, for the people that do the preaching and teaching, that's not the case. This is a community with open ears and open eyes and open hearts. You saw it last week. We had people on these stools talking about what they're learning about God. Not what they learned years and years ago before their hearts hardened, what they're learning right now. You had Kendall talking about confessing her sin and getting back into that habit. You had Peter and Kathy talking about a theological issue that they're researching on their own. You had Pat and Gloria talking about community, talking about getting things out of the sermon. This I'm not saying because there is, it has nothing to do with the preaching, I guess I could say, because there's better preachers in different places speaking to communities that have hard hearts. This is about God's work in your heart and what he's doing through you and your increasing hunger for him. It's that kind of hunger that he'll reward. So keep it up. Hopefully, all through here, there's stories going on in your life like what we heard from the people on the stools last week. If there's not, that can change. Do you remember what Lita said about these three areas that you need to pursue if you're going to grow spiritually? You've got to do the big church experience. You've got to do the by-yourself time, and you've got to be in a house church. And this is actually modeled by Jesus. He's got his small group, he's got his big ministry, and he's got long periods of being by himself. We tried to model these on the blue sheet. On the first half, you got the all together. On the second half, you got the all by yourself. And the bottom half, you got with your house church. If your experience in where you are in life spiritually is not like those people we heard from last week, then maybe, let me just throw this at you, maybe it's because your spiritual diet consists of page one of the blue sheet. And you can no more grow spiritually coming to eat on Sunday morning than you can physically by enjoying a brunch every Sunday and not eating the other 6 days. And it can be a beautiful buffet Sunday morning, better than anything we could prepare, but if you refuse to eat from Monday to Saturday, it just won't grow. So the tools are there, I believe, for us to continue pursuing and getting to know God. It's Isaiah 6, 9, and 10. We are not like this. Thank God. I need to say, too, that as I hear of people changing, I mean, I got some neat emails about the Sabbath, because we talked about that 2 weeks ago and people are sorting through it. It motivates me to grow so powerfully when I hear about God talking to other people, when he's challenging them. I just want to go into the next day saying, what is he going to tell me? Aren't the rest of you like that? When we hear each other's stories, we just want to keep growing. Let's keep talking to each other in house church, and we're going to keep providing opportunities for people to come up and share their stories. And next time your phone rings and Lita says, hey, we're doing this panel on a Sunday morning, that's what it'll be about. Or if your house church leader says, hey, do you guys want to come and share your story? Please do, because it's such a gift to people. And the diversity of where you are is going to speak to where they are in a way that me taking a guess or Ray taking a guess at what they're experiencing just never could. Verse 11. Then I said, Lord, how long must I do this? And God says, for a long time, until there's a stump. But the stump will be a holy seed that will grow again. Think about what you assume is holy. Artifacts are holy. Space is holy. Maybe there's sacred space. Communion wafers, maybe, are holy. What do you think of when you think of holy? Chances are you don't think of a stump. But God calls a stump holy because of the seed that is planted in it. This is a distinctly biblical way of thinking. That out of a stump can come fruit. Out of emptiness can come fullness. Out of brokenness can come wholeness. Maybe even out of death, resurrection can come. When you start to understand that there's something very central to the Christian message that involves holy stumps, you start to think of your life in an entirely different way. I believe that the people in Israel eventually did when they started to think about this holy stump. A couple chapters later, five actually, in Isaiah 11, the prophet picks up the idea of the stump again. And he says, out of the stump of David's family will grow a shoot. Yes, a new branch bearing fruit from the old root. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. So eventually, out of this stump is going to come somebody in David's ancestry. We learned about David maybe a month or so ago. And this person, this branch, is going to have the Spirit descend on him. Those of you who are familiar with the story of Jesus are already connecting the two. This prophecy that we just read, written hundreds of years before Jesus arrives on the scene, suddenly comes true in Luke. When an old man, who I think would describe his life as that of a stump, suddenly hears that Jesus is coming. Listen to what he says. Praise the Lord, the God of Israel, because he has visited his people and redeemed them. That's the word that's used when people are brought out of exile. They've been redeemed. He has sent us a mighty Savior from where? From the royal line of his servant David. Out of the stump of David's line is going to come this branch. The other half of the prophecy we see all over the place, the part about the Spirit of God descending on this branch. Let's just look at one place. In Matthew, after the baptism of Jesus, Jesus comes up out of the water, the heavens open, and we see the Spirit of God descending like a dove and settling on him. The prophecy made hundreds of years ago comes true in Jesus. For many of us who are already believers in this room that Jesus is the Son of God, those prophecies are just sort of old to us. We just know that hundreds of years before Jesus came, there was these prophecies that pointed to him. And so it doesn't hit us the same as it would maybe hit somebody who's thinking about who Jesus is. If you're thinking about who Jesus is, consider this prophecy. Hundreds of years before Jesus arrives, prophets are starting to dream and they're seeing visions from God about what's going to come. And then it comes. One of the things that we're saying over and over in this series is that what God does between the trees in this book, he's always doing. So can we hope that in the stumps of our lives, there will be fruit? Out of the stumps of our lives, there will come this branch. Yeah, I think we can.
In Romans 8:28, we have this promise. It seems to be for stumps. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. It's for them. So the stump will eventually bear fruit at some point. But let's think first, before we take that one to the bank as it is, I think we need to flesh it out a little bit, because how many years are between the Isaiah prophecy and the fulfillment? Hundreds. Does that mean that anybody, everybody who read this promise about the stump bearing fruit got to someday say, ah, there, that makes sense. It didn't when I was 25 and I lost this dream, but now it does when I'm 50 and I can see what God is doing all along. Doesn't happen. Always. The people who Isaiah wrote for are dead and gone. Yet, out of their lives comes something good. So I think we can say this. I think we can say, yeah, something good will come out of the stump. Fruit will come, but just maybe not for you. The fruit that comes out of the stump will fit God's story, but may or may not directly benefit you. You may not be able to say, I had this unspeakable loss when I was 30 years old. And somebody told me it would all work together for good, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and now I'm almost dead, and I have not seen how it works for good in my lifetime. Many of you will have that experience where it comes together, but many of you won't. And you might lose your faith over something like that. You don't have to. God's talking about everything coming together in his story. If you read the rest of Romans 8, you understand that God is talking about all of creation and everything coming together. The salvation that's coming for us is as big as creation. It's not necessarily just in our individual lives. And so now I want to look very carefully at what's happening in our hearts. Because is it enough for us that the comfort that's offered to us has to do with God's whole story and not our own? Are we happy enough that our stumpiness is going to somehow be made right in his story, but maybe not in ours? Because for a lot of people, if it's not about them, it's not good enough. And if you're thinking that way, you're not alone. There's somebody I know whose name is Homer. And he thinks this way. If it's not about him, it's not much good. And there's this particular episode where Homer develops a drink called the Flaming Homer. And apparently it tastes very well, because his friend, the bartender Mo, takes this drink and calls it a Flaming Mo and doesn't give credit to Homer and is getting rich off of this, and Homer doesn't get a dime off of it. And because it's not about Homer, he doesn't like it. This is where the clip picks up.
Stupid Mo, non-inventing recipe-stealing pug-nosed.
Well, Homer, maybe you can take some consolation in the fact that something you created is making so many people happy.
Oh, look at me. I'm making people happy. I'm the magical man from Happyland in a gumdrop house on Lollipop Lane.
Oh, by the way, I was being sarcastic.
Well, duh.
We come here and we hear that it's about God's story and not our own. And is there not a part of you that wants to go, oh, goody, look at me, I'm making God happy. Little church boy coming to church on Sunday, hooray, doing good things. And it doesn't necessarily do anything for me. I'm still a stump. It's a tough one. But I think it's biblical. And I think it gets better. Here's the second thing that we can expect as stumps. You will experience God in a new way. In your stumpiness that just happened to you, you will experience God in a new way. Talk to Ray 2 years ago, before he got stumped, and talk to him now. And you see the difference. Talk to different people in your life who have tried to suffer well before God and see the kind of experiences of God that they've had, the kind of people they've become. They've paid a price for it, but they experience God in creative newness. People in exile always do. Job did. In Job 42, after it's all said and done, he's still in the middle of suffering, and God asks him all these questions. Look at what Job says. I had heard about you before, but now I've seen you with my own eyes. This is the experience of stumped. I've heard about you. I've came and I sang songs to you, and I nodded my head at appropriate parts in the sermon. I even read my Bible and I prayed. But until something like a stump happened to me, I just didn't see you with my own eyes. If your life is all about God's story, then it's a beautiful thing to experience Him. And at the end of your life, as you look back at your life, at the high moments, it will be those profound moments of connection with God that anticipated what you'll enjoy for eternity. When you're in exile, as much as you can, embrace it as a new experience of God creatively working in your life. Now, this is a different way of experiencing hope, isn't it? Very different than our cultural story, but what did you expect? We're talking about life between the trees, not life on a cultural, normal sort of way. There's this myth out there, and don't you buy it for a second, that to be a Christian is basically to be a normal person who just simply believes in Jesus. It's not true. There's nothing normal about you, nor should there be. Not only do you expect to hear voices talking to you, but you're frustrated when He doesn't. And should God ever talk to you and tell you to do something as a Christian, you will immediately stop doing what you're doing and do the new thing. The purpose of your life between the trees is not to accumulate. If you are accumulating, it's so that you can be generous. Our goal as Christians is to not seem normal so that people can kind of slide in beside us. Our goal is to be a little bit edgy, a little bit different. And so it should be no surprise that our hope looks different. We are people who are so sold out to God's story that everything changes. How we spend our time, how we spend our money, and how we dream about the future. What we think it means to be a stump. Don't buy for a second that Christians are just normal people who believe in Jesus. I think part of why people say sometimes, I tried Christianity and it didn't work, is because they've tried to do Christianity without entering into what God's doing. They've used Jesus just as a tool to come into their lives to make their lives better, and then when Jesus doesn't seem to cooperate that way, they bail. And you'll hear them say, I tried that, it doesn't work. You see, they're making this big mistake. They're believing that Christianity is about their best life now, to coin a phrase, instead of me getting into God's story as much as I can. Now listen very carefully, because this is very, very important. You find yourself in God's story, but the way God's story works is that you find things as a byproduct. Okay? On the way to something, you get different things as byproducts. Just try and be happy for a while. Pursue joy on your own, and you find you put up walls and you push people away. The very way we try and get happiness keeps us from getting there. But if you seek first the story between the trees, the kingdom and its righteousness, then everything else comes along. So the byproduct in your life of selling out to God's story are the very deep things that you want, this joy and happiness that you're pursuing. God is not masochistic and dangling hope in front of you. He will bless you internally in your life right now. The way that we receive that just comes from selling out to Him. Last thing that I think you can expect if you're a stump, and it's this: hope. Because as you experience God as a stump in this creative newness, you're hearing from Him, you're pouring into the Bible like you haven't before, you're trying to make sense of it, you're wrestling with Him, and He begins to speak to you, something happens inside of you that makes it real. And you begin to look to the end as hopeful. The Bible talks about that hope in 2 Peter 3:15, and it talks about it in the sense of, here's what it means for you, but the people around you. 1 Peter 3:15 and 16 says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life, and if you are asked about your Christian hope, always be ready to explain it. But you must do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear. Then if people speak evil against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live because you belong to Christ. Okay, 1 Peter 3:15. And if you are asked about your Christian hope, always be ready to explain it. So when was the last time that somebody asked you about your Christian hope? Let me just tell you, For me, it was probably 9 years ago. I don't say that with a sense of embarrassment, because I don't know how you can rig this sort of thing, right? It's just kind of strolling through life with a big grin on your face, kind of, you got anything to ask me? About hope, maybe? No? All right. But eventually, the expectation is that somebody's going to say, what are you about? Or they're going to say something like, you've had a rough ride. I have a friend who has that sickness, and I know what a load it is to carry, yet I see how you're sort of still showing up. You're buoyant. There's something in you that's holding you together. What do you say when that happens? Because if you are in the story between the trees, at some point will. Be ready. And like the crazy revolutionary you are between the trees, you can let them have an earful. You can say, well, I'm part of this story where stumps, where you can lose everything and it can be cut off. Inside is a holy seed. And it'll just grow and bless everybody. They'll look at you and say, oh. And you can say, I am part of a story where I can embrace brokenness because I know that wholeness is the end. I can embrace the darkness because I know that it ends in light. I can embrace the sickness because I know that it ends in health. I can trust that what God is doing in my life now is part of a larger story, and someday I will be celebrated for what I've gone through because of the way that it was caught up and redeemed and brought into his story and used for his glory. For some of us in the room, that will be enough. Oh, to get there. For many of us, we're still stuck in Homer territory. But oh God, what I don't want to be there. I don't think you want to be there. But the truth is, we're part of a story where everything ends beautifully. Everything ends fully and completely because God uses stumps. I want you to think for a second of an area in your life where you've been stumped, where something just turned out entirely different. And I want you to just release it to God for his glory, if you can. Get the lights dimmed here just for about a minute and a half, and then I'll come back and we'll pray. Let's pray. Oh, God, you know what came to our minds when we thought about what we've lost, what's been taken from us, what we don't understand. And you know how it's chewed our guts up. It's made us wonder about you. It's made us wonder if we even want to be here anymore, if we wouldn't prefer to write our own story instead of trying to seek yours between the trees. There are words that are just empty, and then there are words that the Holy Spirit speaks. And you spoke long ago that in the stump is a holy seed, and you saw that it bore fruit. I pray that that hope that you use stumps would be burned into my heart as I think about my life and the stumped parts of it. May it be true for my brothers and sisters in this room. May we remember when we're stumped, that you love stumps and you use stumps. In your name, amen. We do not have to stack the chairs today. So sit for like 8 minutes. And then go get your kids. See you next week.